Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Hey, it's Fran from Chicks in the Office. It's peak summer. One plan is turning into five, but trust, I'll be wearing Abercrombie to all of them. Catch me in their Sloan tailored pan at work and then the happy hour right after. The Dylan dress for dinner plans when you want something easy but still put together. And of course, their denim. Because Abercrombie denim just works, no matter the plan. Keep up with the pace of summer without overthinking it. Shop in the app, online, and in stores.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
It's why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my little friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again! Say what again! I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Rhodes? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Podcast, episode 32. It's the middle of the week podcast. So the one where we go longer, I guess. It's kind of weird to differentiate the two. They're going to start becoming more of the same. They're a little different now, but they're going to start becoming more of the same. Jeff Lowe, Tro Ballins, Ken Jack. Jam-packed show. We have Tomb Raider review, some news to get to. We have decided on our Infinity War death pool, so we're going to talk about that in a minute. And then, of course, the big thing, everybody voted on it. It's our most voted on poll yet. Best comedy movie year 2000 to 2009. Very hard. I started it on Friday of last week, and I gave up. Because it was too much for my brain to process late at night. I'm like, no, I need to actually think about this. It's not easy. And little hint, we may or may not have cheated and expanded the list to 15. Because I'll just take full credit on it. I refused to only put 10 down because I didn't want people saying, well, you forgot this, you forgot this. So we may have expanded to 15. We'll get to that later in the show.
That's a coward move.
It was a very coward.
But I still did it.
I'm admitting it right
now. I still did it to 15.
Yeah, I mean.
There's so many.
There's too many good ones that I wanted to talk about that I felt we had to expand to 15.
Okay.
Unlike the last time we did this. The last time we did this, there was nowhere near as many. I think I had about 15, 16 that were in the running to make my list for 2010 to current 2018. This one I had over 30.
You're the Leonardo of this podcast. So you're the leader. You have the dual katanas. Ken Jack's definitely the Michelangelo.
That's Skylake's pizza, right? I don't know the Ninja Turtles.
I'm April O'Neil.
Yeah. Yeah. Or Splinter.
Oh, wait. There's a different April O'Neil. I'm thinking of a different one.
Yes. Yeah, I think you are.
As a porn star. Sorry. Continue.
I mean, I think that was alluded to when you said that.
Yo,
so we'll get in.
Future content, we should go through like one of those sites comment sections on like parody videos and see what they think about the movies that they're parodying.
I like that idea. That'd be great screen cap content.
Maybe before we get a sponsor.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Probably.
To be sponsored by adamandeve.com. Please sponsor the pod.
So we'll get into the Infinity War death pool at the end of news, but let's start off the top with some comic book news, some interesting news from comic books, the comic book movie world. Justice League, its run is officially over. Paddington, I believe, is the last movie we are waiting for to finish out the box office fantasy league we did. Regardless, Justice League is the lowest grossing domestic DCEU movie. It made domestically $229 million. That is really fucking bad. That's a bomb. That qualifies, well, maybe not. I'm sure in movie industry terms, it's not a bomb. But like in terms of hype and what it is, I mean, that's a bomb. $229 million. Avengers Infinity War is projected to hit $250 million on their first weekend. And now, obviously, Marvel has a much more established brand in terms of
you know, their extended universe. I'm not talking about the other Batman movies, all that. So that's not surprising, but man, for it to only make that amount of money, that's kind of crazy.
Black Panther did $300 million its first 7 days, just to put it in perspective. So Justice League has been out since mid-November. Black Panther did that in 7 days. Not a surprise, because Black Panther's been a phenomenon, but I would have thought Justice League would have done a little more. It got killed by the initial buzz. Everybody came out of the movie and says bad, so nobody saw it. No rewatchability. I didn't hate it.
It also just wasn't that good, which probably doesn't help you at the box office either. But I was just checking it out. The Avengers made $800 million worldwide gross. So how many movies did they have when they made the Avengers, Marvel Universe?
That's worldwide. What is it domestically? So for
$620 million.
Okay, yeah. So that's double.
Yeah, the Avengers did $230 million in its first 7 days. So it even the first week beat Justice League. So
exactly. And Batman's first Superman, Dawn of Justice, did 330 domestically. And that was a lot of hype, but that wasn't anywhere near what Justice League should be hype wise. Like, I mean, that is the pinnacle of these superheroes. That should be big. So that's crazy. We're not going to hang on that too long. We've, I think, exhausted everything with Justice League, but had to touch on how wild that is. But Infinity War pre-sale, Black Panther set some records. Infinity War pre-sale is 257 times bigger than Black Panther and 1,106 times bigger than Avengers Age of Ultron. That's nuts. And that actually leads to what I think it's going to do. Trill, you said it's going to do $2 billion, right? You think?
I think it will be just at $2 billion. Yes.
Which is still crazy.
Oh, it's awesome. This will make it fourth. I think it'll be fourth all time, not adjusted for inflation, because that totally destroys my brain when I think about that.
Yeah.
Would that be ahead of Avatar or no?
No. Avatar's number one. It's Avatar, Titanic, and then I want to say The Force Awakens. 1, 2, 3.
Yes. I believe that's
and
what it is.
I think Jurassic the Infinity World, War is going to be fourth. It's going to leap. I forget the Jurassic World. Yes. You got it.
There's a pretty substantial gap between The Force Awakens and Jurassic World. It's about $400 million. And then from Jurassic World at number four, if you subtract $400 million, you go all the way down the list to about 14, which is actually Black Panther. Last Jedi made $1.3 billion. So, yeah, it's going to make more than Age of Ultron, obviously. It's 1,000 times bigger presale, and Age of Ultron is number seven at $1.4 billion. So it's going to be kind of cool to watch how much Infinity War makes. I mean, the hype is crazy. I was talking to Ken Jack earlier. I guess I'm more excited for Infinity War than I have been for the previous few Star Wars movies. And you know, that's crazy for me to say as I sit in a room with Star Wars toys all around me. And I love Star Wars, but Infinity War, I think there's something about it, like commitment wise.
I am not as excited as I was about Star Wars, but I am still pretty excited. It's easier to get hyped up for an April, May release. There's just something about a summer movie, big blockbuster release. The weather's getting nicer. You're going into that summer movie. And you just, as you see on this podcast, we've slogged through some shit movies in the last couple weeks.
That's understatement.
So we're ready to end this run. We're ready to get back into something that might be a little bit better. Black Panther was great. That was an outlier. We've seen, what was the Commuter? We've seen Red Sparrow. We're reviewing Tomb Raider. It's time to get back to the blockbusters. We're doing that in April. So I think it'll be huge, because it's just a great release for it. And it nothing else is going to be there for it. It's going to be Infinity War and then nothing else in the box office, especially with its new release date.
Yeah, exactly. I totally resonate with what you're saying, that summer movies definitely have more hype to it. I think if you compare it from this to Star Wars, I think the reason I'm more excited for Infinity War is just the ensemble cast. Such a humongous cast, and there's nobody in there that I don't like. And when a Star Wars, part of what they do, which is its strategy, is that they have less known actors, which isn't bad, because we've gotten great actors out of it, like Daisy Ridley and John Boyega, Oscar Isaac, which have mostly stemmed from Force Awakens. But having established cast come out with Infinity War and all of them in that singular movie, it's just insane. It builds up the hype like crazy. Even if it's bad, I'm still going to watch it 50 billion times.
All right, so moving on from comic books, Indiana Jones. Filming next spring. Give your quick, not expectations, what you want, your wish list for Indiana Jones, what you want to see after the fridge explosion movie from few years back. Actually, more than a few years back at this point.
I don't really want this movie at all. I am not buttering for this. And it's not a sense of they're ruining Indiana Jones, because those movies were always, those will always exist. I'm not a big, you're ruining the franchise guy, because you're not erasing the previous good movies. You just pretend the crappy ones, the fourth one, doesn't exist and you're fine. I just don't really care at this point to the Indiana Jones character. I think it was great for three movies, especially the first one and the third one. Harrison Ford did a great job with him. He is Indiana Jones, so you have to bring him back. But at this point, it seems like his story has been fully fleshed out. I don't really want to see any new adventures. I don't want any of that. I'll go see it, right? But it just is not something that I am dying to see. I just like, leave it alone and you'll be fine.
They should just do an origin story and cast Alden Ehrenreich and everyone will get mad again.
What if they, that would be the funniest troll job, if they just got Alden Ehrenreich and brought him in, like, yeah, he just plays all Han Solo things now.
Yeah, but like, even in, like, I know you're joking, but even an origin story I wouldn't even want. I just don't care. Those movies were, they were good at that point in time. They defined Steven Spielberg's career at that point. They were huge successes. They're very culturally relevant, to say the least. But at this point, I don't know where you take it. I don't know how you take something like that and make it interesting. I really don't.
What if you could have River Phoenix comes back from the dead to do that? Because RIP in peace, great actor. I would love to have River Phoenix as origin Indiana Jones. I mean, we'd have to go back in time for this particular scenario, but I would have loved that situation.
You're great. Telling jokes and I'm getting mad about Indiana Jones. We're riding two different waves here, Ken Jack.
Speaking of Indiana Jones and origin stories, we're going to talk about Tomb Raider later, just a reminder, because we will say something about Indiana Jones again in this podcast.
Yes.
A little hint, just a little crumb trail there. All right. One more thing before we get into Infinity War Death Pool explanation. Well, it's a two-parter. It's two trailers. One, I'll let Ken Jack take the first one, because you're a huge Sicario fan. Then Trill, you can take the lead on the second one, because you're a big fan of the game Tag. I don't know if that's true or not, but just for the sake of this moment.
Oh, yeah, so definitely a huge fan. I hope
you're
a runner,
so I feel like you're good at Tag, right?
I'm not a runner. I used to run. I never classify myself as a runner, though. The furthest I've ever ran in one run was 12 miles.
Yeah, Humble Break City over here.
But you talk to a real runner and they're like, oh, 12 miles, that's cute. I'm prepping for the fucking...
I think if you can run more than 5 miles, then you're considered a runner, in my humble, fat-ass opinion.
Okay, well, we don't want to get into a running podcast here, so let's move on.
Yeah, this is... But go. Yeah. Sicario, the new trailer came out. Kendrick, take it away, because you were not happy with this one.
Yeah, it gave away half the plot so far in just the second trailer. The first one is really vague. They did a lot of the stuff that they showed you in Sicario, just sweeping landscapes, like maybe like one or two sentences at most. And then this one, first of all, they changed the name of the movie from Soldado to Day of the Soldado. They just changed the movie. Like, how soon is it coming out? Like, you can't do that. Change the whole fucking name of the movie. And they gave away half the plot, which is like, I don't want to know that. It's obvious they're going very far away from the direction of Sicario, which is, it is what it is. But I'm not as excited for it anymore based off of what they showed us in that trailer.
I disagree. I am very excited. Let me tell you why. Taylor fucking Sheridan. All right, let me go through his writing credits. Sicario 2015, Hell or High Water 2016, Wind River 2017.
I'm aware of the Sheridan trilogy.
Yeah, Yellowstone, and this year, which I don't think has come out yet. No, it's a TV movie. And then Sicario Soldado. I trust him with my life at this point. I would take a newborn baby and I would put it in his hands and I would expect that baby to come out looking like Jeremy Ritter. Or Jeremy Ritter. Jason Ritter. Jeremy Renner in 30 years. He's been on a roll, so... Regardless of what they do with the trailer, they got to generate buzz. They got to give away the movie. I don't care. I think the movie's going to be good because of Taylor Sheridan writing it.
It's the first sequel, though. And this, I feel like, happens a lot with the writers where they get tasked with a sequel based off of commercial success. And then they get like sort of taken over by the corporate end of it, where they say, write the sequel for this. make it like this in your previous writing, but include XYZ so that we can make more money.
Yeah, I don't think
so. We'll see.
I don't think you're wrong. I think that is a worry. But I'm going to give, because of his track record and his resume, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. And if anybody at HBO is listening to me right now, get him to write a season of True Detective.
Oh, God, yes. I'd kill for that. Fuck that Pizzolazzo guy. I want to punch him in the face for TD2. That was the worst season of television ever.
I'm excited for Sicario. The title change threw me off big time. That's very bizarre. And I don't think I've found an answer for that yet, but I mean, that doesn't really ruin a movie for me. It's a title. But I mean, I like the trailer. I do agree with Ken Jack. I'm really in the boat of don't show much in the trailers. You know, we've said that about all the Star Wars and Marvel projects, and they can do that because of the hype. But I feel like Sicario, there's enough hype, I guess, for that realm of a movie where you don't need to show a lot. People know what it is. But again, I don't know the marketing machine as well. I just, you know, look at it as a consumer. But yeah, I'm excited for Sicario. But how about this Tag movie? And I'll set up Tag for you. Tag is based on a true story, apparently. Crazy. And somebody tweeted at us today and said they read the story, and it's actually a pretty good story. So I guess I have to read the story. But it's got a pretty decent cast. Ed Helms, Jake Johnson, Hannibal Buress, John Hamm, Jeremy Renner, Annabelle Wallace, Isla Fisher, who once again has an American accent. I don't know if I've ever seen her do them. If you've seen her do a movie where she has a regular accent, let me know. Rashida Jones, Leslie Bibb, and Brian Dennehy. And they all have names except for Hannibal Buress on IMDb. So I'm not sure if he's just going to be having his own name. But it's basically, well, the premise is a group of ex-classmates meet up and organize a game of tag that finds them traveling across the country. But Jeremy Renner's character has never been tagged and is getting married and is retiring. So they're trying one last time to tag him. I kind of like the trailer. What did you think, Trill?
Oh, I really like the trailer. And again, this is part of the children's game cinematic universe.
Yes,
it is. We're just adding to the lore here. It looked great. I love this cast. Ed Helms, love him. Jake Johnson, great. Hannibal Buress, of course. And John Hamm, anytime you can get John Hamm into a comedic role, I think he's much better. Except for Mad Men. He was great in Mad Men because he did define that character. But I do love John Hamm as a comedic actor. So I'm super stoked for this. I need to know more about the movie through reading that short story or the story that was published on it. At first, before I didn't know it was a story, I assumed they were going to go the game night route where they're going to get involved in some international smuggling deal through a game of tag and have to, like, you know, beat off bad guys. mark that one. That's a line right there. So I'm glad it's seemingly based in reality, and they're keeping it maybe more as a character comedy movie rather than a more situational comedy movie. So I'm fully buttering for this one. This looks like it's going to be a good one to me personally, in my opinion.
Personally. Yeah, I'm buttering too. That's a great cast. I'm a big fan of Jake Johnson in a lot of roles. I'm not a big New Girl guy. I don't know if you guys are. I haven't seen a ton of it, but I enjoyed him in a lot of different movies. Drinking Buddies kind of went under the radar, I think, as far as, like, you know, offbeat comedies. I enjoyed it a lot. It is depressing as fuck. Amazing.
The whole movie was ad-libbed, I believe. Like, I don't think there was a script for it. Yeah, there was a plot and premise idea, and I think they just off the cuff recorded it. I could be dead wrong, but I'm giving four actors and actors a lot of credit.
If that's the case, it's even better then. But yeah, them, John Hamm's great. Jeremy Renner's amazing. So I think it's great that we have another movie added to our Game Night cinematic universe. So we'll eventually start the world building process on that and maybe give them some of our own additions.
You have Truth or Dare this year. You have Tag, and you have literally Game Night.
Where's crazy. Red Rover? Red Rover needs a game movie.
Duck, Duck, Goose.
No, I just want to throw Cock Blockers in there too, because I think that's Don't Wake Daddy adapted into a movie.
Oh, fuck you.
What do people call Duck, Duck, Goose in another, in like Minnesota? And
oh, dude. I don't know, but if anybody calls it anything other than Duck, Duck, Goose, that is a certified weirdo name.
Tro, you're from the Midwest. Like, do you call soda pop?
No, man.
All right. Hell no. I just wanted to make sure.
We have a couple listeners from Minnesota. I know for a fact. So let us know. It might not be Minnesota, but I know there's another state that calls it something else.
All my family's Southern, so I call any soda product Coke. I'm gonna go get a Coke, but I may not get a Coke. I may get a Sprite, but I'm still gonna say I'm gonna go get a Coke.
Oh, here you go. Duck, Duck, Gray Duck is a variation only played by Minnesotans.
What?
That's just too many words.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
Goose is one syllable. Gray duck is two. It just, I don't understand it.
Yeah, yeah.
Call a sailboat a schooner up there too, I bet.
All right, last thing, and then we're going to get into Tomb Raider. Infinity War Deathpool. We had some really great suggestions that sparked kind of the best idea to do this. So part of the thing is when we did the cinematic universe, what the fuck am I talking about? When we did the box office movie fantasy league, did not set it up great. And that's part of the reason why it's been so hard for us to keep track of it. The Google Forms have been great. So what we're going to do is we're going to set up a Google Form. And you're going to have four options to pick from. So you're going to have the same amount of, or the same number of characters in each box. So Iron Man will be in the first, second, third, fourth, etc. Every character in that movie, we're going to assign like Vegas odds to. So we're going to assign them, you know, 30 to 1 they die, 100 to 1 they die. And so you'll basically make a parlay. You will pick four, and you'll have like a combined odds of the chance that you hit all four. And then whoever hits all four with the highest odds, you know, the worst odds, they will win. So there'll probably be multiple winners. There could be none, though. It is parlays. Parlays are not easy. Just ask me from this past weekend in college basketball. So this is how we're going to do it. We're going to team up with the Weekly Planet, James, Mr. Sunday Movies, and Mason. So we're going to team up with them. They're going to talk about it as well. And we're going to create this big Infinity War death pool with Vegas odds. So you'll select all four. Trill, I'm going to do this here on the pod. So you can either tell me yes or no. I'm going to need some help creating a good spreadsheet here so we can track it very easily.
You got it, Leonardo.
But I'm looking forward to
earlier in the pod.
Yeah, it is. That's a sick reference. You got the
sick reference. Everybody knows I got the sickest.
I'm excited about this. I feel like this is the easiest way to do it. You got to create your four best picks, but you can take a lot of risk or you can take no risk at all. Like Pepper Potts is going to be like 2-1. Like that's not good odds, but I mean, come on, she's probably going to die. You know, so
rest in peace.
Loki will have like 5-1 odds, but Iron Man probably going to be the longest shot of odds, and probably Peter Quill as well. So
Black Panther will be a pretty long shot.
Can I just pick everyone if I want to? Just bet on all the horses.
Ken Jack's going to be going through all four, and it's like, where's the fifth option? Where's the sixth option? So we'll have fun with that. James will be on the review.
They die two times to one movie? Is that what that means?
I don't know betting at all, so this will definitely be a struggle for me. I'm warning you guys in advance.
Thor dies eight times.
I mean, it's not going to be hard. If somebody has 1,000-1 odds, those are bad odds. But if you want to be riskier, because you know, if you pick just four people with 2-1 odds and you win, if somebody else had, you know, the higher odds than you, you're not going to win shit. So we'll explain it.
Fucking explaining gambling to Ken Shack on the podcast.
I zoned out.
We'll have
uncharted territory.
So that's it. That's the Infinity War Death Pool. We're going to launch that in a little while. We got to build the Google form to be right and get the odds. We'll have to call up Brent Musburger, call up Vegas, get them to lay down some odds. I bet there's odds somewhere, because there's odds for the Oscars. There's odds for some movies here and there. I bet there's odds somewhere. So we'll do this for ourselves. No money involved. Don't send us money to put down for your
send me money. Send me money. Like, no particular reason. Patreon in bio. LCP Kenya.
Yeah. So that's been news. We got to talk about Tomb Raider. When we come back, at least you have a candor. We're raiding tombs, folks. We'll be right back.
One eight seven seven cash for Trill. Patreon in bio. 1-877-CASH-FOR-TRILL. 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 Give me your money today.
And we're back. Lights, Camera, Podcast. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Trill Ballins. It's movie review time. Just one this week. Next week, we're going to be reviewing Isle of Dogs and Pacific Rim Uprising. So that's cool. I didn't know Isle of Dogs was coming out next week. I totally forgot. We're going to re-release our schedule for what we're going to see. Everything got screwed up because of Infinity War moving. All the movies got moved around, so we have to redo it.
Isle of Dogs is getting good reviews, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. People
excited to see a good movie. Yeah.
Yeah, got approved for China, by the way. It was like they were like saying it might not go to China. Also, Deadpool is being released in China, finally. Like, Deadpool.
Oh.
Yeah, like the first Deadpool, yeah.
Well, I want to see that one. If we can get Donnie on, and if we can get a copy of that and watch it and compare the differences, that would be a good podcast.
That would be good. All right, Tomb Raider. Alicia Vikander. Walton Goggins, and then other people. Like, oh, Nick Frost is in it.
Yeah.
It's not a star-studded cast, for sure, but it does feature one very big actress. Alicia Vikander is obviously an Oscar winner. It's an origin story. I'm not sure how much we'll get into non-spoiler-wise, but we'll start it out. Initial thoughts and score, Trobolins.
I give it a 45. Somewhat generous. The movie is very, very slow in the first 30 minutes to 45 minutes. It becomes a lot more enjoyable after that 45-minute period. So I liked it a lot more after I got through that hump. For a movie that's based on somebody exploring something, aka tombs, it feels very claustrophobic and pinned down to one to two locations for the whole movie. There isn't really anything you would expect in terms of like wide sweeping landscapes or anything epic. It's very, very contained, if that makes sense. And it's based off of the video game reboot in 2012. From what I hear, relatively faithful to that, but it's a more realistic spin on Lara Croft. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. It was very dumb. It's a dumb movie. It's fun at parts. So that's why I gave it a 45.
Ten jacks.
So I thought Tomb Raider was sort of like the Ready Player One of adventure heist movies. There's really nothing except like an hour and a half of never-ending cliches and shitty one-liners. And it sort of disappointed me in two ways. So it's Vikander, and I instinctively want to love Vikander, and I couldn't love my Vikander. So Vikander, I'm upset. Number two, it was sort of another dud in the movie video game universe. And that's just something we want to have be successful. And I looked up a list of the top 25 video game movies. They all fucking suck. Every single one of them, top to bottom, is awful. Like the number one
might be the best one, though.
Dude, the number one on the list that I was looking at was Prince of Persia, Sands of Time, Drake Gyllenhaal, like Persian, which is awful. One bit of self-awareness I'll observe on it, though, is that I've never played this Tomb Raider game, so I don't know if it's a faithful adaptation. That might make it more enjoyable, but I don't know for sure.
Well, I will say that. Well, first off, what's your score?
43, my good friend.
43, okay. So I will say this quick. I've watched a lot of reviews on this because I'm curious, like, do people like this more than we do? I gave it a 63. I liked it a little more than you guys, I think. I did enjoy parts of this movie, enough to be entertained by it. And we'll get into the beginning trope because that is my biggest gripe, hands down. But people who've played the video game, the recent reboot, however you want to classify, of Tomb Raider, say it is the most accurate video game to movie adaption yet to date. So I guess here's the question, and you don't have to answer right now. Maybe we answer this at the end of this review. Actually, let's do that. We'll answer at the end of the review. When you're talking about video game to movie adaptions, what are we looking for to make it right? Are we looking for an accurate depiction, or are we trying to just get a good movie, even if it scraps the video game thing? So just think about that. We'll get to maybe our thoughts on that at the end of the review here. But you know what? We have to get the spoilers. We haven't perfected the non-spoiler section yet. So let's get into spoilers. First off, let me say the listener score was 59. You, the listeners, gave it a 59 out of 100. Right. As of right now, there'll be more votes, I'm sure. Right now, if you don't want to hear spoilers for Tomb Raider, skip ahead. Okay. Tomb Raider. This is an origin story, and as much of an origin story as it gets. Like, to a T. Almost like Iron Man in that sense. Like, Iron Man was like the thing that kicked it off, and at the end he goes, I'm Iron Man. That kind of reminds me of how this movie ends, because the end of the movie, they show that part from the trailer where she says, I'll have two, or I'll take two for the guns.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the I'm Iron Man moment. But obviously Iron Man's fantastic and an incredible movie. This one, man, Trill, you mentioned it. It is so slow to get started. She's boxing. She's like a Postmates driver on a bike. And then she does some fox race thing on a bike in London. It just drags on. And I think the beginning of this movie, because I actually really liked Alicia Vikander in this, and I liked Walton Goggins. I thought the script brought him down a little bit, but I thought the performances were fine. But man, that beginning, Trill, it is rough.
Yeah, the bike race was weird, and I didn't really get into it because the all I can think about is, like, if this movie came out in 1992, this shit would be on rollerblades or something. We just need to one up our extreme sports, and now the new extreme sport is like bike courier, punch a hole in a can of paint and follow the green paint until you find someone and rip the foxtail off their bike. It's like, I bet people actually do that, but it was just like over the top characterization in terms of, say, like, she's really skilled, which we know that, but like you're saying, Jeff, it's super origin story. So they went as far to have to demonstrate that to everybody through kickboxing, through that bike chase, through probably something else I'm forgetting. Whereas I just wanted to see some more actual tombs being raided, as the title of the movie says. And that's why I made that differentiation, is once they got on the island, so they go onto an island to find the tomb of Kimiko or Himiko, which is a ancient, it wasn't like a goddess, but it was like an ancient noble who is buried there for unknown reasons. And I thought the movie got better after that.
I think I had three big problems with this movie. Number one, Walter Goggins did a really good job acting, but his character just wasn't boss villain material. It was more like he was a henchman, which in the grand scope of the movie franchise, because he is sort of more of a henchman than he is a boss, but in the singular universe of that movie, he just didn't feel like a movie boss, like a bad guy. He felt more like a henchman. He was sort of like meek and not like super evil. But I think the most annoying scene for me in the entire movie was the falling sequence after her initial escape on the island, which was about, I think, no less than 12, 13 minutes of her just consistently falling down, to the point where, like, I was thinking, like, this is the scene from Hot Rod where Andy Samberg falls off the mountain. So this is like literally almost shot for shot, that scene consistently falling. She just will not stop, like 10 minutes of it. It was too long. And then the third thing that annoyed me the most is the final part in the movie, the very final scene where she's trying to break in through the tomb to get save her dad from the bad guy. That was a shot for shot remake of The Last Crusade. That entire third act was The Last Crusade.
Yeah, we said we were going to talk about Indiana Jones again, and it really was. I mean, it was ripped right from Indiana Jones. It looked exactly like it. I mean, it was a fine scene, but I mean, come on. When you're in the territory of like tomb raiding and like treasure hunting, and you can't rip off Indiana Jones. That's the one that's done it best, right? Like, you got to be a little more creative than that. And I know it's very similar in that sense, but it felt like a complete ripoff. And Troy, you noted that very early on.
The one thing I do want to note that I did like about that is they made it based in reality rather than based in fantasy. So I was expecting for them to open up this tomb and for their faces to melt off due to magic, much like Indiana Jones, but it was due to a disease, which I don't know if a disease can last 110,000 years, whatever, in an enclosed space, but it did. So that rooting it more in reality was kind of cool, because I thought they were going to go the route where they use something supernatural, and that would take me out of it a little bit, especially for this movie. But yeah, I mean, it was very heavy on the Indiana Jones. And I don't know how you get away from that if you're raiding tombs.
Yeah.
That is the definition of a tomb raider.
Definitely tough,
Because the video games are based off of Indiana Jones to some extent. They certainly seeked inspiration from him, maybe not too much, because Lara Croft shoots people and Indiana Jones uses a whip.
Both Indiana Jones and the original Tomb Raider movies of 2000 and 2002 they all had magic, though. So the early Tomb Raider movies had the precedent of using magic, so it's not exactly like it would have been out of nowhere for them to just use that.
I'm not saying it's out of nowhere. I'm just saying I somewhat liked it because this movie was so rooted in reality to begin with. Because it was boring till you got to the island, and
that's really true. Yeah,
and you talk about the reality it's rooted into. Like, we had one of the more exciting parts of the movie was a chase on a dock in, I think it was Hong Kong.
Yeah,
and you know, it was kind of cool, but it also was like not very. I don't know how to say this. Like, everything felt very closed off, and like claustrophobic, like a closed set. You know, like they were filming it on a soundstage in LA, which they may have done. So if it was more like epic and sweeping, then I could understand the supernatural presence there. But at the end, it just turned out to be some nasty ass disease.
Dude, poor Daniel Wu. He was missing in the entire third act of the movie. Like, you don't see him until she's completely done with the tomb. Like, I think it was a solid half an hour break where he's billed as a star of the movie, and you don't see him for maybe 30 minutes.
I did shortchange him. He is in the movie prominently for at least some of it, and he is pretty good.
Yeah.
I would say him, Walton Goggins, Lisa Vikander, and who played her
Dominic
dad?
West.
That's Dominic right. West. He's in it, which him being alive was the least surprising thing I've ever seen. Because, I mean, you knew he was alive still, because they teased in the beginning that he's dead. And she starts off finding all of this information about him and like what he was doing with his tomb raiding, because she finally is going to go over and sign some papers to get all his inheritance, which was, it's still odd to me. They say she's very independent, but she's like literally a poor person. She can't pay her gym membership. Like, I mean, go take some of the fucking money at this point. I mean, you can't, I mean, you're stealing apples from the guy that runs the gym. So that was, I think, a weak part of the story. But she figures all that out, and her dad's dead, and then she goes to the island. So, yeah, I mean, I didn't really think he was dead, so it wasn't very surprising to me.
The funniest scene for me is the tomb of, is it Kimiko or Himiko? I forget.
It's like Himiko or something. It's the name.
Himiko, yeah. That her tomb needs to be unlocked through these puzzles, and they're puzzles similar to what Laura Croft earlier in the movie was doing to trace back the clues her dad left her. And while she's solving this puzzle, they do one cutback to her solving one of the earlier puzzles, just to remind you that she's good at puzzles. I'm like, thanks. I remember her solving the puzzles from 60 minutes ago. She's Laura Croft. I get it. She does it. And that goes back to, I don't think you can blame Vikander or Goggins or any of the actors for the movie. I don't think it was that bad of a movie, but the performances were fine. It just is what it is. It's a entertaining bad action movie. It's nothing more than that. They gave fine performances, but the characterization and the motivations of like Laura Croft are somewhat unclear at some point. Like, she doesn't want to sign her trust because she doesn't want money, because she doesn't believe her dad was dead, or she's being stubborn about it, and that's fine. But then, you know, she finds her dad and then she signs it, and then that kicks off the end. So it's just like, what changed, right? Like, I guess you got that closure with your dad, but I mean, tell me about like what made you do that decision. Like, I didn't really understand like the change that inspired in her.
It felt like a waste of time almost. Like, like, okay, now I want the story. That's my frustrating thing, is that, look, I get you're trying to set up a new franchise in a tentpole, and I know Spider-Man Homecoming had the crutch of Civil War, but still, like, man, you didn't have to start it so soon before she really becomes Laura Croft, like the Tomb Raider. It was disappointing in that sense. And actually, that end scene, you want to talk about what the end scene reminded me of? It reminded me of The Usual Suspects, because she's going to sign the paper, and then she has these flashbacks, like really quick cuts, as somebody is walking out of the room.
Yeah.
And when she realizes that the elevator shuts, and I can't say the name of the person that we're referencing from The Usual Suspects, because I don't want to have to bleep it out, but that reminded me of that scene from the end of The Usual Suspects a little bit.
Jeff, to your point from before, that was the most annoying motivation, that she just didn't want to sign her family trust away because she didn't want to accept like her dad was dead. And her dad owns apparently like basically like the Viacom of financial conglomerates in England. Like, they own every single financial company in the entirety of Great Britain. I'll declare my dad dead right now if you sign over a trust to me for like $20 billion. I'll do it right now live on the podcast. My dad is dead. Make me sign something. Give me $20 billion. He is alive and well. But still, I will do it right now for that much money.
I just, the thing is, like, I understand if she's just making it by. I'm trying to think of a movie or like a TV show where that's the case. I don't know. But, you know, there's examples of people like they're fine. They don't need the inheritance. They don't need the money. Or if they have like a rich sibling, they don't need it. But again, she literally couldn't pay her gym membership and was like stealing apples from the guy running the gym. Also, during that same scene where she has an apple, they manipulated it for the trailer, because in the trailer she says, I'm not a superhero, you know, but in the movie she's saying she's not a superhero, you know, referring to the other boxer that just beat the shit out of her. So I thought that was interesting, as well as the fact they took that I'll take two gun scene as if that'd be a pivotal part of the movie, and then it really was just the end scene of the movie. So actually, the marketing was a little bit of a lie in that sense, too, because I really thought we'd get a lot less origin story because they showed that gun thing.
Yeah, marketing being a lie, go figure, you know? So I think my final thoughts on it, I really like Vikander. If there's a sequel, I want to see it because I'm more interested in the post-origin story Lara Croft, where she gets the money and develops a lot of cool stuff. It's more unlike the Angelina Jolie type character. I know they're trying to stay faithful to the gritty nature of the 2012 reboots, but I feel like that was a very 2012 thing that really was inspired by The Dark Knight, where everything had a gritty, realistic reboot. And I'm just kind of bored of it. And to make one in 2018, it seems like you could take it in a lot of interesting, cool directions. Some of the things I did like about the gritty reboot is that she's learning along the way. One of the better scenes that Vikander had in the movie, and I will say, like, thinking back to some of her acting, like, Kenjack, you mentioned the plane. It looked really brutal when she was falling, and she made it very convincing that she was being hurt. But she kills a man for the first time. And that's one of the more interesting scenes in the movie and one of the more interesting parts about an origin story is she comes to grips with that. And forgive me for wanting deep characterization out of Tomb fucking Raider, but I would have rather had more stuff like that than a bike chase with green paint.
It's a great, great point. That was a great scene where she has to drown that henchman or whatever, and she just can't come to grips with it. Meanwhile, Angelina Jolie was mowing people down because she's already established that sort of confidence or whatever you want to call it. So I'm agree with you in that I'm totally ready for a trailer. Well, now she sort of stepped into the role of being the badass and not so much the meek person that doesn't necessarily have the confidence of that level yet. So I'm ready for it. I'm with you on that. Right, let's see Tomb Raider 2.
Yeah, and I think it's cool. And Jeff, your question earlier is, do you want a video game movie that's faithful to the video game or a video game movie that takes liberties? Because video game movies have been all over the board. I think to make an interesting video game movie is very challenging, as you've seen from the results. And this might be one of the better video game movies, which isn't saying a lot of them. I don't really care about how faithful they are to video games, because I personally think video games are within their own contained universe, where I hold them to a lower standard because they're telling a story over a 20, 30, 40 hour period. Whereas a movie has to condense it all down to 90 minutes to a 2 hour interval. So it's very challenging to do that. So okay, they were faithful to it, but as someone who didn't play the video game, as just a viewer, I shouldn't have to play the video game to go in. That I don't really care about that. I just want something more interesting. It doesn't get any extra points for that.
Yeah, so I'm trying to think of how I could compare this to movies. I think a good comparison for this is maybe reboots. So a good movie that I think did this recently is Jumanji. So Jumanji, we were it's got to be super faithful to the movie, or it's got to make Robin Williams proud and all that. But it sort of did its own thing and just sort of took the title and it made its own separate good movie. And I'm okay with a movie doing that with a video game, just sort of taking the title and the general concept and making something good out of it instead of focusing so hard on making it loyal to the actual video game. So if I had to choose, I think that's what I would pick.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just,
that's fair. It's a tough way to really look at it. It's how do you do both? That's the question. And Do you have to do both? Because it'll really piss people off who are the fans of the video game. And, they're a massive part of your target audience. You know, the Tomb Raider fans want to go see Tomb Raider, so you have to cater to that a little bit. But you also want to make a good movie, something engaging. This movie is, I think, okay. It's just a movie. To reference our friends at the Weekly Planet, it's just a movie. And I think that's the disappointing thing for me, is I didn't want it to be just a movie. I wanted it to be a fun action movie and exciting, which is what I also expect from Ready Player One. But that's for 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, but this one, as I mentioned before, and I hate to keep hammering on this point, it felt like it was filmed on a very closed soundstage and there wasn't any expanse to it. And at least with Ready Player One, you see shots of this expansive battle or these expansive fights that maybe don't feel so locked in. I get it, it's Tomb Raider. Maybe she should feel it. But even the entrance to the cave of Himiko was so underwhelming. I would have thought you would have gotten this grand entrance, and yeah, they go inside and they have that temple, but it was misty and dark and you didn't really get much. It didn't feel like an adventure is what I'm trying to say. The Tomb Raider games feel like an adventure, and I don't think they got that adventure element into the movie.
It's obviously much different than the Angelina Jolie ones, and that was on purpose. They definitely did that on purpose, but I like the direction. I just didn't think it was perfectly executed. I actually wouldn't even say it was very well executed. It was rough. It definitely had some rough points.
I think that a good comparison for this movie too is this is basically The Mummy that came out earlier, except the best possible version of that movie, The Mummy. Like, you get rid of all the subplots and all that weird garbage shit screenwriting, and then you get Tomb Raider. It's like the next step in the evolution for The Mummy.
Yeah, that is a good point. It did feel somewhat similar. Maybe just the settings or whatnot. But I don't know. To boil it down, Vikander did what she could do. I will go see a sequel because I think just the story of having Laura Croft be more established with less of the origin story will be interesting. And she was good enough in that character for me to still be interested in it. The problems with the movie, they're not her fault. They're not Goggins' fault. They're not anyone acting in it. They just took a video game and adapted it to a movie the best they could. Could it have been better? Yes. I don't know how it could have been better, but that's also why I'm not a screenwriter or a director.
Yeah, none of us are. For sure. I mean, that's the thing. Whenever I hate criticizing movies in that sense because I could not do what they do. I could not do what they do. And that's why I want to interview directors, because I do want to get their opinion on people that criticize them. Because some people are wildly unfair. Right. Anyone that says I could do a better job that isn't making movies or hasn't made a movie, they're full of shit.
Well, everyone complains about somebody at their office when they come into their cube and tell them they left the coffee pot on. It's like, who gives a fuck? But that's what these directors and screenwriters have to work with these intellectual properties. You get so many hands in the cookie jar saying, oh, you can't make Mickey Mouse or Laura Croft do this. You can't make him do that. You can't tell this story. Oh, the storyline's too dark. The storyline's not good enough. You got so many competing interests that, you know, not only are you trying to do something artistic, but it's also that business element, I think, that really gets most directors down. Who knows how it got involved or in the way in this movie? Maybe it didn't, but I know for a lot of other projects, probably did. So yeah, boil it down. I mean, look, anyone who makes a movie, Seth Rogen said it best on an interview with Howard Stern. The most fascinating part about any movie is that you're just impressed it even got made. So I got made, and give it a 10 point for that one. But I just didn't have fun all the way through. I had fun once I got to the island, and then the start of it, I didn't have that much fun. So that really took it down for me, because I want you to open the pages to that book and for me just to dive right in, feel like I'm having a blast. It was fun at parts, not all the way through. Trill Ballin sounds off on the podcast. Hey,
that's the best way to sum it up. Have you heard about this Tomb Raider movie? It's raiding tombs. Yeah. I actually watched, I don't know, I'm going to go off on Jay Leno for a second. I watched all of David Letterman's monologues about Jay Leno and Conan O'Brien after the fiasco, and they're just incredible things to watch. It was David is best. Fantastic. Tomb Raider. Trill Ballins, you just summed it up perfectly. You gave it a 45. Ken Jack gave it a 43. Our listeners gave it a 59. I gave it a 63. So in the same realm, because we've had a few weeks in the last few, or a few episodes in the last few weeks, where we've been somewhat different on scores, but this one we're in kind of the same ballpark here. So that's Tomb Raider.
Can I make one more point? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The Cloverfield, or what, the God Strain, or Cloverfield, what was the name of that movie they released on Netflix after the Super Bowl?
Paradox.
Cloverfield Paradox. Tomb Raider would have been the perfect movie to release on Netflix right after the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's good enough, and I forget what I rated Cloverfield Paradox, but that might be a paradox in and of itself. But I enjoy Tomb Raider more. I think it's good enough to generate hype, but I don't think it's something you'd want to go to see a theater to see. But if this movie was on Netflix, I'd give it that Netflix bump up in terms of the score adjustment, because not having to pay for it and sit in a theater, I think would make this movie a little bit better, because you wouldn't be as mad for having to shell out cash.
Yeah.
$18 for IMAX.
Another good point. Yeah, it was only an IMAX in New York City, at least at the AMCs we go to. That's a little ridiculous. Don't force me to see an IMAX. It's kind of annoying, but also sponsor the pod.
Have you heard about this IMAX? Have you heard about this?
The screen's I'm going to bleep out that part so AMC doesn't hear it and not sponsor us. When we come back on Lights, Camera, Podcast, top 10, it's going to be 15, comedy movies from 2000 to 2009, our most voted on poll yet. This is going to be fun. We'll be right back on Lights, Camera, Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to this meeting of the Video Game Movie Council. Mr. Bungie, you have the floor.
Thank you for agreeing to let me make my pitch to you. I am petitioning that you make a movie about our smash hit video game, Destiny. With over $500 million made at retail, there is endless potential for a cinematic adaptation. Would you like to know more?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Okay, to hear more, please give me $20 cash each.
Okay, let's hear it.
Thank you for your purchase. Destiny takes place in the mythic science fiction version of Earth about 700 years in the future. Our main character is aided by a robot voiced by Peter Dinklage from Game of Thrones. Using cutting-edge special effects and world-building, we can...
Hey, are you alright? What's wrong?
To hear more, please insert $20.
Whatever, fine, yeah, here you go.
Or, purchase our Gold Member Season Club Pass and get all future content at a bargain rate.
Well, how much is it?
Only $59.99.
I think I'll pass for now.
Okay, as we were saying, with these incredible special effects, we will be able to create a sense of wonder and...
And what?
To continue, please insert $20.
Come on, we just paid.
You should have bought the Gold Member Season Club Pass while you could.
Yeah, we realize that now. Alright, fine, here it is. What is happening? What is happening?
You have disqualified for the Destiny Omega Class Loot Crate Package. For only 12-month installments of $99.99, you get all the DLC content for this pitch. A Polaroid photo of Peter Dinklage walking his dog. And a voucher for a 3-night stay at the La Quinta Inn and Suites of your choice after your wife leaves you for missing your mortgage payments.
Got man, no breakfast is not included, baby!
Alright, fine, we're sold. Where can we sign up?
You already did!
Welcome back. Lights, Camera, Podcast. Here's the big part. Best comedy movies from 2000 and 2009. Someone tweeted at us when we did the best comedy movies from 2010 to present. Like, if you hate them so much, why wouldn't you just do the 2000 to 2009? Well, guess what? We're doing them right now.
We're doing it. Stop being mean in our mentions.
Well, I'm excited for this one. As I've said now a lot on this podcast, because we had a ton of votes on this. There were some interesting answers. There were some interesting movies that didn't get picked even in the top 30. There were some interesting ones that didn't get in the top 15. So we expanded it to 15 because, again, I'm a coward because I asked for this to happen. I said, guys, we got to expand to 15 because there's just some movies that I'm going to leave off that I don't want to leave off because I want the discussion on Twitter. Not that we're scared of people calling us out, but I want the discussion to be more about how good a lot of these movies are. So we decided to expand it. Maybe we'll eliminate some of the argument over what we missed. And so we can actually discuss some of these movies and have some fun with it. So we want to have a more open discussion here, more positive vibe. So 15 movies. So this is the tough part. You got to rattle off 15 through 6. We will circle back and touch on any of your 15 through 6 that didn't get mentioned and talk about some of our favorite things. But for now, we'll get through the 15 through 6 and then we'll all break down our top 5. Ken Jack, you lead it off. 15 through 6.
Okay, so as we said, this is very difficult. I'm still not happy with my final list whatsoever, but I'm just going to rattle them off. Number 15, Zoolander. Number 14, Old School. Number 13, I Love You, Man. Number 12, School of Rock. Number 11, The Hangover. Number 10, 40-Year-Old Virgin. Number 9, Borat. Number 8, Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Number 7, Shaun of the Dead. And number 6, In Bruges.
I like that. I did not rank In Bruges because I felt it was a dark comedy and a little more of a comedy in the sense that Three Billboards was, because I thought Three Billboards was a dark comedy at times. And so while I did obviously on the last list put the rom-com up there with Big Sick, I just felt for this one I left it out. But I do love In Bruges. So, okay. You have some on there that I think we're going to hear from soon. So I also think that you're going to have some at your top that I didn't have. At my top. Interesting 10 through 6. Ken Jack. Again, I'll read them off. Zoolander, Old School, I Love You, Man, School of Rock, Hangover, 40-Year-Old Virgin, Borat, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, Shaun of the Dead, In Bruges. My 15 through 6. 15, Mean Girls. 14, Team America, World Police. 13, Borat. 12, Tropic Thunder. 11, Wet Hot American Summer. 10, Shaun of the Dead. 9 Hot Rod, 8 Anchorman, 7 40-Year-Old Virgin, and 6 Role Models. Trollbollens.
15 Step Brothers, 14 Dodgeball, 13 The Hangover, 12 Tropic Thunder, 11 Team America World Police, 10 Knocked Up, 9 Best in Show, 8 Role Models, 7 Anchorman, and 6 40-Year-Old Virgin.
I'm blown away by the Best in Show pick.
Dude, Best in Show rules.
Did that like just make it into the 2000s? What year was that?
It was like 2001.
Yeah,
but it's a great movie, man.
Oh, it's 2000.
I love it. Yeah. I love it.
It is. It's part of the list of about 30. It was 33 movies that I had pared everything down to. We had the list at 156, and the list could have been 250. I took a lot off. Scary Movie 2, or Scary Movie 4, 5, Date Movie, Epic Movie, Disaster Movie, Meet the Spartans, all that shit. Dropped all those off. Because, I mean, look, no one is going to vote for those in bulk. You know, there's not going to be a majority on those movies. All right, listeners, 15 through 6. Mean Girls, 18.7% of the ballots. Talladega Nights, 22.6% of the ballots. Hot Rod, 23.1% of the ballots. Tropic Thunder, 24%. Pineapple Express, 24.2%. Borat, 27.5%. Wedding Crashers, 33.4%. Dodgeball, 33.7%. Old School, 36.2%. And number 6, 40-Year-Old Virgin, 36.5%.
I'm shocked Borat's that high.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not.
Okay.
It's one of those things. How old were you when Borat came out? Like, where in school were you? Were you in college at that point?
I think I had graduated college, my friend. No, I was still in college. I think I was a senior in undergrad.
Is Borat not going to be on your list, Trill?
No, Borat's on my list. I was shocked it was that high. High being bad, low being good.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right.
Like high as in high number. Actually, yeah, that's... Yeah, sorry.
I mean, I had it at 13. Ken Jack had it at 9. So what are the ones that were very similar? So Ken Jack, or excuse me, Trill and the listeners both had 40-Year-Old Virgin at 6. Anything else that we had very similar? Tropic Thunder, I had at 12. The listeners had at 12. Mean Girls, I had it at 15. Listeners had it at 15. You had Hot Rod at 12?
No, I had Tropic Thunder at 12.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Okay, now I'm looking at it. Yeah. So all three of us had Tropic Thunder there, but not too much overlap. But I do see some movies that are different here and there. So these top fives will be interesting. Ken Jack. Let's start it out. Number 5, fifth best comedy 2000 to 2009.
My fifth best comedy, I have to sort of prelim for my top five. So for my top five, I picked movies that I think are, and I'm going to say the word that we said we're not going to say anymore, iconic. It's movies that I think are iconic and generational and define comedy for the era of this 10-year gap that we're picking out. So for my number 5, I picked Hot Rod. While not too popular as far as box office goes, I think Hot Rod and that crew of people that were in it, the SNL crew, that humor is still so revisitable now. Like, you watch that Hot Rod again today, it is still so goddamn funny start to finish. There's so many bits and so many comedic devices that they use throughout it that are used more now than ever, not necessarily in movies, because like we explored last podcast, is that movies haven't been so hot with the comedy, but in TV shows, they're still using so many devices that they started in Hot Rod now. So I'm going with Hot Rod number 5.
It's a great pick. Hot Rod is one of the more underrated comedies in a long time. And you're right, it does not get the love it deserves. So Hot Rod, I definitely agree. I think it's going to be on Trill's list, though. So I'm going to wait.
Hot Rod's not on my list, dude.
Ooh, okay. Oh, so let's dive into Hot Rod a little more
stinky.
Then. Because Trill, I know there's one line in that movie that makes you laugh very hard, and that's the Will Arnett dong bags line.
Yeah.
Grab a vitamin water. Should I make that dose?
No, thanks.
Coolio. Hey, maybe I'll get a box of dong bags so we can knock boots later. What do you think?
That scene in the Chris Parnell stomach tattoo scene.
People don't listen to AM like they used to. Seems like it's more about FM and color TV.
That's stupid.
It sure is, Kevin. In fact, I've got a tattoo here that fully illustrates my point. It's of this rebellious young man, and he's urinating on an FM radio. And then this other stream of urine is going on to that television set. Implausible, I know, but I like to imagine that he had sex the night before, and now a little bit of residue is blocking his urethra, allowing the urine to flow in two separate directions. You may also note that an AM radio is sitting safely dry in the middle.
Him trying to jump the pool lands right in the pool. The psych gags are great, too. There's just so much in that movie. It's packed with great moments, and everyone in that movie has a moment that is hilarious. Jorma has a moment. Bill Hader has a moment. Danny McBride has a moment when he's beating the shit out of that one guy with the traffic cone.
I'm freaking pumped! I've been drinking green tea all goddamn day!
Man, he hit his ass with a parking tow, man. Yeah. Nice.
God, I go to church every goddamn Sunday! You gonna bring the demons out of me?
It's so funny. Shit, I'm going to rewatch tonight.
Yeah, Hot Rod's a very rewatchable movie, by the way. There was a thing going around on Twitter, what's the most rewatchable movie? Hot Rod is another one I laugh every time. A lot of these on my list are rewatchable. But Hot Rod comes in at Ken Jeck's number five. My number five, and I won't dive into it because I do know this movie's going to come up again. And I won't say for who, but I know it's going to come up again. My number five is Forgetting Sarah Marshall. The difference between my five and my one, there isn't much of a difference. Actually, one through six for me, you could kind of rotate them and it wouldn't mean much because they're all basically one A, B, C, D, E, F. So Forgetting Sarah Marshall is my number five. What's your number five, Trobolins?
My number five is Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, this movie is awesome. It comes on the heels of a surge in biopics with Ray and, of course, the Walk the Line movie, which kind of takes from a lot of them. And John C. Reilly, we mentioned, greatest character actor, one of the greatest character actor. It's just a hilarious movie. One of my favorite scenes in this movie is when he goes and hangs out with the Beatles and they're all visiting the guru. And I think it's Jack Black, Justin Long, Paul Rudd, and I'm forgetting maybe Jason Schwartzman. I don't know. And they keep reminding you that they're the Beatles.
That was freaking transcendental, Paul McCartney. Don't you agree, John Lennon?
Yes, Dewey Cox. With meditation, there's no limit to what we can imagine.
What do you think, George Harrison, of the Beatles?
I don't know, you know, I'm just trying to get some more songs on the album, you know.
And as Ringo Starr, I'm not so interested in meditation. I just like to have fun.
It's a funny movie that I actually didn't put on the list at first. I forgot. I had a few omissions at first. Somebody caught it quick and it went on the list. Yeah, Walk Hard's a good... I didn't expect it to be on your list, though. But I think you mentioned it recently, too, so I shouldn't be surprised.
I love parodies, as you well know. I'm a huge parody guy, and this is a great parody movie of the biopics because it nails a lot of the really dumb, over-exaggerated elements of some of them.
So number five for Trobolins, Walk Hard. Number five for the listeners, 41.9% of the ballots had this movie. It's the same as my number five, Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Comes in at number five in the listeners list. So let's recap the number fives. My number five, Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Ken Jack's number five, Hot Rod. Trobolins number five, Walk Hard. And the listeners number five pick, Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Ken Jack, number four.
My number four is Dodgeball. Dodgeball is my hands down favorite Vince Vaughn role, period. I think it's better than his role in Wedding Crashers. That might stir up some controversy. I don't really know. I also think it's maybe my favorite Ben Stiller role in comedy. I think it's hilarious. whatever his name is, the Global Gym dude. It's a great overall story and a really hilarious ancillary characters. All like those random little roles, like Justin Long's, like even Bateman, Patrick Bateman as the announcer, that line gets quoted all the time now. Like, was it hell of a, see how the strategy pays?
Jason Bateman.
Yeah,
American Psycho announcer.
Fucking up names big time today, funny. And they even had a Chuck Norris reference at a point when Chuck Norris reference.
Oh my God.
The Lance Armstrong cameo is fantastic too.
Yeah, shit.
Yeah, Lance is good, but man, that fucking Chuck Norris, that gets me every time.
It kicked off the Chuck Norris resurgence that finalized with the awful Chuck Norris jokes.
I think the favorite gag in it I had was when he's like, this is $100,000. And it was like just a stack of tiny, like one stack of bills in the suitcase. And like, yeah, it's not as much as it doesn't look as quite the same as what you might imagine.
I really like Joel David Moore's character not realizing there was a guy dressed as a pirate on his team. Obviously, Steve the Pirate, played by Alan Tudyk. Great line in that movie at the end. And Joel David Moore, who sounds like Andrew Luck, by the way, I've mentioned that many times. But he's Andrew Luck's voice twin. Dodgeball was one of those movies that was around for a while in terms of relevance, referenced for a long time. I feel like it started to fade off a little bit, but I think our generation still really likes that movie.
Great Rip Torn role. If you could dodge a wrench, you could dodge a ball. And also, ESPN 8 The Ocho, I feel like it's mentioned a lot in normie Twitter
circles. That's right.
What's your other favorite Rip Torn roll?
Torn Ripped Hole or Horn Ripped Toll?
Oh, boy. Ken Jack's number four, Dodgeball. My number four. This was so tough.
I hated it.
This movie could be number one. My number four is I Love You, Man. There's a theme with my lists. Paul Rudd. Paul Rudd on my list is in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of my top 15. Very common theme. Ooh. With Paul Rudd. Paul Rudd
I'm trying to think.
So money in this movie. This whole movie is absolutely fantastic. Man, this movie is so fucking funny. And it holds up. It holds up. Well, I actually made the fish tacos. My girlfriend and I made the fish tacos from this movie. Fish tacos are the tits. Some great, great
here
lines.
Here we go, Galaxy. Here we go.
Great Joe Truglio role, who I may bring up later for another movie. Rob Hubbell, I believe is how you say his name. He plays Tevin, the other real estate agent. And he has easily my favorite line in that movie. It's when he's talking to Paul Rudd's character about getting like more promotions across Los Angeles.
How badly do you want to sell this house?
I need to. I
know you need to. You got to do it the old-fashioned way. You got to network. You got to meet a lot of people. You got to get them some leave-behinds.
I have brochures.
Brochures are totally different, okay?
How?
You see this picture right here?
Yeah.
Do you know who took it?
No.
M. Night Shyamalan, the director of The Village.
Okay.
What's your bus bench ad situation?
I don't have any.
What about urinal cakes?
How about urinal cakes?
Do you use them?
When I pee.
That's not what I'm talking about. Go into any Olive Garden, P.F. Chang's Chinese Bistro, TGI Fridays, Fuddruckers. What do they have in the bathroom? Urinal cakes with my face on it.
I don't see how
I've had people come up to me on the streets and say, I know you from somewhere. Yeah, you do. You pissed on my face, friend.
And it's so ridiculous. Great actors in that movie, too. J.K. Simmons. Killer role with Andy Samberg, talking about his best friend, Hank Mardukas. Hank Mardukas, that was my fantasy football team name for a few years. It's a different Paul Rudd role, because he has kind of the same role in some movies like Anchorman, 40-Year-Old Virgin. He has like a little bit of rage, Role Models. But I Love You, Man, he took on a different role. Actually, Wet Hot American Summer, too. They're all very similar, but they're all great. But I Love You, Man, he's killer. Celery Man, Paul Rudd, my favorite. I Love You, Man is number four for me.
I love Favreau in that movie, dude. The scene where Paul Rudd throws up on him and he just goes into like a pure rage. I fucking cry. I was watching it the other day, like maybe 3 weeks ago. I was dying laughing at that scene again.
The big dog.
There it is. Let me ask you guys. Beatles, Stones, on the count of three. One, two, three.
All in.
Beatles.
I don't care.
All right, again, I Love You, Man is my number four. Trill Ballins, what's your number four? I don't know what you're going to be having up on this list here, because there's a few I thought you'd have that you've said are not on your list at all.
I'll throw you some curveballs. My number four is Mean Girls. Mean Girls is Tina Fey's masterpiece. Yep. Ken Jack's making a face right now because he doesn't really like the pick, but we talk a lot about coming-of-age movies, and this is, to me, one of the most perfect coming-of-age movies that has more of a comedic tilt to it. Lindsay Lohan was at the top of the world for a while, and unfortunately her career took a different turn, but the supporting cast in this movie is great. Again, we mentioned Tina Fey. Tim Meadows has a great role in it as well. And then Amy Poehler as the cool mom is one of the funniest characters, because I was, you know, growing up, you always knew somebody like, and that's a caricature of that, but I really related to it as someone who was fresh out of high school at that point or close to that age. And just the murderer's row of main characters in there with Rachel McAdams. And I think that was her big break. Amanda Seyfried and Lacey Chabert. I don't know how to say it. Sure. But I think this movie gets brought back into our discussion for some of the stupidest parts of it. Like the date reference that people make, like with the desk
October
scene.
October 17th.
Like that, but there's a lot of like really good one-offs when Tim Meadows talking about his nephew's name being Anthony.
That's me. It's pronounced like Katie.
My apologies. I have a nephew named Anthony, and I know how mad he gets when I call him Anthony. Almost as mad as I get when I think about the fact that my sister named him Anthony.
Tim Meadows is probably one of the more underrated parts of that movie who doesn't get referenced a lot as well.
Oh no, he's phenomenal in it.
The gymnasium scene where he's going to have like the heart to heart with all of the, you know, like all the female students.
Now, what we're going to try to do is fix the way you young ladies relate to each other.
okay? Lady to lady. So who has a lady problem that they like to talk about? Yes.
Somebody wrote in that book that I'm lying about being a virgin because I use super jumbo tampons, but I can't help it if I've got a heavy flow and a wide-set vagina.
Yeah, I can't do this.
Or the gym coach who's like, if you have sex, you will definitely die.
Yeah, that really is Tina Fey's masterpiece. And not to discredit her as saying she hasn't done anything great since then, but that's up there with the best comedies. I mean, I have it as 15, but again, and so do the listeners. That's something that could climb up the list if I were to reshuffle it. That's why I'm not happy having to do this, because I don't want to seem like I'm saying anything bad about some of these movies, because Mean Girls is great. I do like the pick Trill. Trill Bollins goes Mean Girls at number four. The listeners, number four, a little bit of a surprise for me. Number four at 47.3% is The Hangover, which
it's fine. I'm not totally surprised, I guess.
I don't want to hate on it. I put it at 19. So it's number four for the listeners. Kenjack, you had it at 13, and Trill had it at 11. Look, The Hangover is hilarious. Like, I don't want to discredit it. It just didn't age well enough for me. And I almost think that two kind of ruined it for me. Three doesn't mean anything to me. I laughed at two when I saw it, but I think it made some of the first one's jokes stale. Because when I saw The Hangover, I have it at 19. I'll say this. I laughed as hard as any of the movies on my list when I saw The Hangover for the first time. That is one of the loudest theaters I've ever been in terms of laughter. Mm-hmm. It was so funny the first time you saw it. It beat for beat, everything in that movie from start to finish was hilarious. And there were so many shocking moments and things that you didn't expect. Mike Tyson coming out, even though it was in the trailer, but that whole Mike Tyson thing, the Phil Collins thing. I know, Joe, I'm sure you liked that when it was in the movie. The Hangover is a great movie. I hate discrediting it and not putting it on my list, but for me, it just didn't age as much. And the more I think about The Hangover, the more I think the second one kind of lessened the effect the first one had.
Yeah, that's a good point. I agree with you in that when I saw it in the theater, my theater was also absolutely dying. And that if you look at it in the, you know, contained universe of just The Hangover 1, it is a phenomenal movie. The other two kind of stunk, but it is what it is. It was a very, go on, putting the money back in the jar, iconic movie for comedy.
It is.
I think one of the reasons I didn't rate it as high is a lot of the laughs depend on surprises in that movie. You know, the Mike Tyson reveal being one of them. The Ken Jeong reveal being the other one. I mean, the first time you see that, it's like, holy shit. Whereas some of these other comedy movies are a little more rewatchable for me.
So The Hangover comes in on the listeners list at number four. Kenjack, you had Dodgeball at number four. I had I Love You Man at number four. Trill Bollins, you had Mean Girls. Kenjack, number three, getting close to number one. What do you have?
I feel the need to stress that this is what we think of the best comedies and not our favorite comedies, just because I wouldn't put this in my favorite comedies list. But Step Brothers, out of all these movies we have here, this is the movie I believe made me laugh the hardest in theaters. It was just perfectly outlandish, bombastic humor. It's not based in reality, just like basically all of our boy Willy Ferrell's movies. It's reduced. I don't mind him being based in ridiculous, because this movie was so goddamn funny. And there's one of those ones in high school and college, it's just, you get quoted nonstop throughout. I think the amount that your movie gets referenced says a lot to how important your movie is to your genre.
I'll save my comments on Step Brothers. I mean, I know that telegraphs what I have, but I'll save my comments. I love Step Brothers. Number three for me, this is a movie I've talked about a lot as well. This is a movie that's been ranked before in a rankings we've done. Number three, my favorite Christmas movie of all time, Bad Santa. Bad Santa is, as I've said many times, hilarious, very dark, but I think it's a little more on the comedy side than in Bruges. I've talked about it enough on this podcast, but I love everything from Thurman Merman to Willie. I mean, Bernie Mac, rest in peace, Bernie Mac. Rest in peace, John Ritter, another great role. Their dynamic, John Ritter being really meek and not wanting to say even like the word shit, and then Bernie Mac kind of being hard-nosed and right at him as they're talking. He's always smoking and eating oranges and drinking Metamucil. It's one of the better Bernie Mac roles. Love Bad Santa. Again, you can go listen to our Christmas episode. I talk about it a lot more. But Thurman Merman is right up there with Hank Mardukas as one of my favorite comedy movie character names. And one more, which again, we'll get to soon. But Bad Santa comes in at number three for me. Trill Bollins, what's your number three?
My number three is Superbad, which I think will be the number one of a lot of people's lists. Here's why I didn't rank Superbad number one. I enjoyed the other movies I had higher more. or lower, depending on my definition and how I feel like defining lists these days. Which you know is wild. So I'll save it when we talk about Superbad. But Superbad, going back to that viral Twitter post tweet, is what they call them, is one of the more rewatchable movies, but established Jonah Hill as, you know, being a top comedic actor. It had Emma Stone in one of her first roles. It was a great Michael Cera role, and the jokes were just killer. The whole McLovin thing, I still find McLovin funny. The name McLovin, the look of McLovin, the ID McLovin, and a lot of these comedy movies, like you make a dodgeball reference or something like that, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, like old reference, yeah. Or like somebody's like Frank the Tank or something from old school, you're like, okay, whatever. But if somebody makes a fucking McLovin joke, I'm losing it.
Again, I'll be saving my Superbad comments, but I do agree, still hilarious. So Terrell Bond, Superbad is your number three. My number three, Bad Santa. Ken Jack's number three, Step Brothers. Terrell Bond's number three, Superbad. The listeners, number three, 49.1% of the vote. Step Brothers. So same as Ken Jack. Number two, Ken Jack. You are the people's champ. You probably have the most crossover with listeners on lists in terms of the same number.
That's because I'm dumb and you guys are smart. And most of our listeners, I think, align with me in that respect.
That's a nice way to call our listeners dumb.
Yeah, but it also means I'm one of them. So okay. Take it. It's Sweet and Sour Patch Kid for you listeners out there.
What's number two for you?
Number two for me is Anchorman. Anchorman, maybe not as rewatchable as a lot of the other movies on this list, but the cultural effect it had, especially I think for me and Jeff being in high school at the time, it was insane. Just getting referenced nonstop. I think there was like entire days where like you could just speak in Anchorman references. It's not as enjoyable again looking back, but it's such an insane impact. It was probably the establishment of our boy Willie Ferrell again, his archetype as the man child role, which he never seemed to really get out of in comedy. But I think that's where it actually like it just kind of stuck him in there. Like that's the movie that like established him as that role, and then he got all the movies that he made after it based off of that. Sort of character.
The news team battle is one of the better things in any of the movies we're going to talk about here. The news teams going up against each other, the cameos, one of the best joke ideas. Like I talk about I Love You Man. I Love You Man is very funny. And there are things written into the script that are funny. Like I don't know how to define it, but I think in terms of a crafted joke, like a crafted gag, I think that scene from Anchorman, the news team battle, is literally as good as comedy gets.
A well-placed cameo in a comedy movie can do a lot. And we just talked about it in some of these other movies. I forget which one we discussed, which is Bad Radio. I did want to say people are going to give Will Ferrell the credit for this, but shout out to Adam McKay, who is the brains behind this incredible run. Had Anchorman, Talladega Nights, Step Brothers, The Other Guys, and Anchorman 2. The Other Guys obviously not being in this list just because of the time frame. But he's a genius and the writer and sometimes director of a lot of these endeavors. I think he needs some love on the podcast.
Well, you got to give him his proper name. He's Academy Award winner, Adam McKay, one for the Big
Short. For the Lego movie, also a pretty. Right? No, I'm just kidding.
Big Short, which is also a really funny movie. He's going to be doing the movie about Dick Cheney.
Yes.
With
what's that called again?
Christian Dick? Bale. Backseat, I believe. It's not called Dick.
The name Dick's already taken.
So, no, shout out to Adam McKay for sure. Ken Jack, your number two, Anchorman. My number two, I said I'd talk about it, Step Brothers. Man, I think my favorite character out of any of these movies we're going to talk about was Adam Scott's character. He is so funny in this movie. He nails that douchebag persona so well. And I've played this clip before.
It is gorgeous.
Are bonita fish big?
What?
Dale, don't interrupt the man when he's telling a story.
No, it's fine, Robert.
I was asking about the story.
What's this guy's deal?
I don't know, son. It's okay. Well, Dale, they are what's called a trophy fish. So, yeah, they're pretty big. I'm sorry. anyway... God, I'm sorry. Now I forget where my story was going.
Ah, damn it, Dale.
No.
Robert.
What?
I asked him.
Okay.
No, he can join in, Robert. It's really okay.
Well, I asked him twice not to interrupt.
Listen, gang, don't be mad at Dale for ruining the story. and possibly the evening. It's totally fine. I have a lot more stories.
Derek, that you do.
Guilty as charged with the stories.
The way he delivers that whole scene, and they said, you do have a lot of stories. And he says, there's something about a delivery with a great line that is so perfect. And I know I'm not like coming in here and having some sort of like epiphany for everybody. I mean, no shit. That's what makes comedy funny. But his delivery of everything he said as Derek is, it's great. And that movie's blooper reel, one of the best blooper reels for any comedy movie. And we posted on our Twitter. I don't know how they filmed that movie.
Have you ever done it so much in one period of time? Last July, I was doing so much fucking. Last summer was like my biggest summer for pussy. You ever cut a fart in a girl's face while you're doing it? This 1 month, I got so much pussy, I had to ice my balls.
I think it's another one of these movies that depends on when you watch it. Comedies, for me, had a lot more impact when I was 15. I feel like you guys were like 15, 16 when Step Brothers came out.
I was 17.
Gotcha.
But then I was 15.
So you mean you're right.
Yeah, so something that came out in like 1999, like, or maybe even before that, like, if we were to do comedies of all time, I would say Something About Mary is in my top five. And you guys would be like, what the fuck are you doing? And it's just because I saw that like funny time where the jizz dripping from his ear was the most hilarious thing in the world for me. I think it's like that, something that molded your sense of humor. Step Brothers is one of those type of movies.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's one of my higher rated comedies on my movies that I have, because I started ranking back in 2006. I believe it has something around a 90. I love Step Brothers. It's a very close to number one. Trill Ballins, what's your number two?
My number two is Borat. Borat has been reduced to somewhat of a punchline these days with the My Wife quote. Maybe associated a little bit with hack comedy, but it's a genius movie. It combines my two favorite things in comedy, Sacha Baron Cohen and fucking with people. And it does it really well in weaving in the real life scenes that he shot with some sort of story. Very hilarious movie. I just love the rodeo scene where, I don't know, I can't describe it that well. I won't go into it, but I also think it's a movie that would be very hard to get made in 2018. And it's something you'll never see again, just because it was at that right time where there was like a little bit of digital media, but there wasn't enough for people to say, hey, there's this guy and he's fucking with everybody and he's Sacha Baron Cohen. So when he was coming up in the late 90s and the early 2000s on all these shows, people didn't know who Borat actually was. He got a lot of interviews with famous people. They didn't know who the fuck they're dealing with. You can't replicate that because everybody knows who he is now.
That's something, you're right. There's no movie I don't think that will be able to replace that level of success in he's fucking with people, that is.
Well, yeah, just because of that and because it can be perceived as an offensive movie. I mean, there are a lot of subjects that are touched on in that movie that I don't think anyone would touch on in 2018. For better or for worse, I don't want to make any big political statements, but I think it's a lightning in the bottle type of deal. And that's why I have it at number two.
I think you nailed how to describe that movie best by saying it's genius. He's a genius with that movie. It's impressive what he did. And it was nominated for an Academy Award.
Mm-hmm.
And he won a Golden Globe for it. He won a Globe.
Yeah, it's amazing how he can go through a movie where one of the funniest scenes are two men wrestling naked in a hotel lobby, but also make some social commentary as well in there. It just melds everything together.
It's interesting how he hasn't really been able to replicate that success. Like Bruno was a little out there, and The Dictator, not really either. Neither of those movies I thought really lived up to Borat.
Well, The Dictator, he didn't do
it
any
wasn't
scenes.
The same style, yeah.
Yeah, it was just him playing a character. And Bruno, maybe half and half, but yeah, I think everybody just knows who he is now. And you got to go through so many clearances to do an interview and be so careful with that. Like, there's no way he's getting access to anybody without like having a background check run on him. The funniest thing about Talladega Nights to me is him with the fucking Perrier sponsorship playing that French character.
Yeah.
It's just so stupid. I really wish we could have seen him in that Freddie Mercury biopic.
Oh, yeah. God, I almost wish you didn't
say that. Mr. Robot. Fucking Mr. Robot. Mr. Robot himself. And I know you'd be like, well, he's not actually Mr. Robot. Well, yeah, you know what? Hootie wasn't Hootie and the Blowfish, but now he's Hootie. So now Rami Malek is Mr. Robot.
I hope maybe one day he does. You never know. So your pick for number two is Borat. Number two, listeners, 51.3% of the vote. They had Step Brothers along with Ken Jeck at number three. And guess what? The People's Champ is at it again. Just like Ken Jeck, the listeners have Anchorman at number two. 51.3% of the vote. Number one, I think I know what's about to happen on three of these four lists. So if it is, let's wait to talk about it. Ken Jeck, what's your number one?
Superbad.
My number one is Superbad as well. Troll Ballins, what's your number one?
It's Forgetting Sarah Marshall. It's not Superbad, but it's in the same family as Superbad. You want me to talk about Forgetting Sarah Marshall right now? Because I will.
Yes, we'll get to Superbad in a minute. I think at this point you know what number one for the listeners is, but which, by the way, means Ken Jeck and the listeners have the same 1, 2, 3. But Troll Ballins, get into Forgetting Sarah Marshall because I do have some things to say as well.
Forgetting Sarah Marshall to me is one of the most brilliant comedies ever created. And it is also the single most rewatchable movie. Every time it's on HBO 2, I will watch this. Jason Segel created a masterpiece, weaving in a weepy man boy of a character who goes through almost a complete transformation in terms of finding himself through the movie. And the secondary characters are some of the best written secondary characters ever in a comedy movie. The way he got almost a full backstory for Kristen Bell's character just by having her be a bad CSI type actress. Like, immediately your mind is like, I know what that type of person is. Aldous Snow, I know what type of person is. Jonah Hill is somebody who's trying to suck butt to get ahead in life. I know who that person is. Like, you feel like the characters he created in this movie were fully fleshed out and actually existed. They actually could exist because that's how realistic it felt. But then, not getting too realistic, he also threw some very bizarre humor in there with the Dracula's Lament puppet opera, which is just like a perfect mixture of just funny all the way through in this out of left field type comedy. It's getting kind of hard for me to admit.
I don't know the rest of the lyrics,
but I can't say enough good things about this movie. Mila Kunis, probably my favorite role of hers. I don't know what the production went like, but I felt like it was the most fun production of any movie ever created. Everybody on that cast loves each other, and they should kiss and get married.
Another great Paul Rudd role. Great Paul Rudd role.
Yes, very good. I was about to say, he has so many good lines.
How long have you lived out here?
Man, I don't know. I quit wearing a watch when I moved out here.
Wow, that's so cool.
Yeah. No, like, my cell phone has a clock on it, so I don't really need it.
Right, so basically the same thing.
Oh man!
You sound like your friend London.
Even the sex scenes are some of the funniest, most like comical sex scenes in a movie, where all the snow's just doing the helicopter on her or something like that.
That's what I love about Apatow movies, man. They're all based like somewhat in reality, unlike a lot of the other movies like on the list in general, like whatever Step Brothers and stuff like that. You can relate to a lot of the characters, which is why I have Superbad at number one, because it's very much coming to age, and that you can relate to. I would say either for me, Jonah Hill or Michael Cera's characters, and I definitely relate to Peter in a lot of respects. So it's based in reality, but it definitely goes way out there in terms of comedy and realism.
Nicholas Stoller directed this, and he's also done Get Him to the Greek Neighbors and Neighbors 2, and did some work on The Muppets with Jason Segel too. So he's done some good stuff too. It was a perfect mix of, you got Stoller directing, Apatow producing, and then Segel just writing a fucking fantastic concept and the right casting. I love it so much. I think it's, I don't know if it's as funny joke for joke as Superbad is, but there's something about the characters and how fucking endearing they are in this movie that just make me love it. If it's so much more positive.
What's the CSI, the fake CSI called?
At the end, she gets a new job as some like animal psychic or something like that, like a new role where she plays like an animal psychic in the credits.
The show, I think, was Crime Scene. I think it was literally called Crime Scene.
Crime Scene.
Crime Scene, Scene of the Crime. Crime
Scene, Scene of the Crime.
Well, that's a great Billy Baldwin role, too. And he's actually Billy Baldwin in the movie, because Peter, Jason Segel's character, like smashes the screen. Oh, and that's right, because he does jingles, or he does like scores TV shows, and he starts playing the Seinfeld theme because he doesn't give a shit anymore. But Billy Baldwin has all those one-liners.
Take a look. What do you think?
I think it's going to be hard for her to re-enter the pageant without a face.
Fuck, dude, such a good movie.
Forgetting Sarah March, that's a great pick. You said that to us the other day, that was going to probably be your number one. And I that's the best part about this list, which makes it so easy. I'm glad we expanded it. Again, whatever, we're cowards. But I think we all agree for the most part on most of these movies. Forgetting Sarah Marshall it's dynamite. Number one for the listeners, 60% of the vote, hands down the most voted movie, Superbad. So let's get into Superbad. The number one pick of myself, Ken, Jack, and the listeners. It is maybe in terms of comedies, I hate using the word iconic. We gotta pull up a fucking dictionary.
Let me get the source out here in this bitch.
Superbad, for the time being, I'll say, is probably the most iconic comedy movie of the last 20 years.
I'd say so too, yeah.
For what it did, for how popular it was, for how much it's referenced, the people in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like that's a hot take. And I feel like people who are a little older than us, and that's not a joke on you, Trill, because you're a little older than us, but I mean like people who comedy movies for them when like they were our age, like you're looking at Caddyshack, which I love Caddyshack. Caddyshack is a hilarious movie. But like Superbad, I know some people around that age might say, oh, whatever, it's comedies back in the day were better. No, Superbad is up there with one of the best comedies of all time. And in terms of impact, people in it were amazing. They went on to have huge careers. Literally an Oscar winner, Emma Stone. Oscar nominated, Jonah Hill. Superbad is so funny. And I think it is, for me, behind Ocean's 11, the most rewatchable movie.
Yeah, dude, I agree. I think it's top five comedy all time for me. And it's very difficult probably for an older person to relate to when like their favorite movie is like fucking Blues Brothers. Like, I don't know how you could go from that mindset to thinking Superbad is good. So it's nothing to do with them. So maybe it's more of a generational thing for us. But I think it's just undateable. I think everyone who's loved it when it came out will still love it like 40, 50 years from now. And it's not based off of like any time period where you need to live it to understand it. I also think it was some of the best casting of all time, like you were mentioning. Jonah Hill as the false, confident fat guy, and Michael Cera as like the hormonal, unsure teenager. This is amazing. Hader and Rogan, great duo. And I think, like I mentioned before, what made it great was what made a lot of Apatow movies great, and that it's somewhat based in realism and that you can relate to the characters, which I did in a lot of the ways. And it was still, it takes that realism and then just gives it like a solid dash of, you know, something fantastical to make it funnier.
The gag where he talks about how he has a condition that afflicts whatever percentage of the population and is drawing dicks was some of the one of the funniest things I remember seeing in cinemas. And even the McLovin, when he just says, I have a boner. He talked about delivery. I mean, that line by itself is fucking stupid, but the way he was directed and the way he delivered it made it you like totally got McLovin. Like, they were so believable as these outlandish characters. It was so hard to do. It's like Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Like, these comedy movies at the top of the list have a lot of heart. They have a lot of feeling in them. You feel for the characters. You feel sorry for them. You sympathize with them. You laugh at them. Some of the other comedy movies, like we saw, you know, Game Night, right? Game Night, you didn't really care about the characters all that much. So there's like a big difference between like one of these great comedies and that.
It is relatable. And that's a lot of the Apatow movies. And that's why I know you said you tried to avoid putting all of them in here, but that's why I have them on here. They're relatable. I can relate to these comedies. Like they're funny in that sense because there's so many real life elements that you understand. There are so many one-liners in that movie. There's so many moments that you forget about. There's a line I just forgot about where they're standing outside the grocery store.
Fogel, shut the fuck up. And take off your vest. You look like Aladdin.
Okay.
Every time.
All right, let's stop this madness. Let's go get some dessert.
No, I can't. I gotta go meet my counselor. I'm picking up my classes for next year.
What, so I gotta sit here and eat dessert alone like I'm fucking Steven Glansberg?
Yeah.
Gangsters, what's up, guys? I was just walking down the hall, and Nicola was right in front of me. She was wearing these tight white pants with this black G-string, and you could see right through the pants, man. It was so sweet.
just stuff you're right, like the that delivery is fucking great. Stupid. Yeah.
Joe Lotrugli also has a great role in that. When he hits Seth, he like tries to give him $7 to get him to not go call the cop.
You better get us a shitload of cash or a shitload of alcohol or you're going to fucking prison.
Let's work together. We're working together. Here we are. It's like, let's make a deal. Here we go.
$7? Are you fucking serious? This isn't enough for anything. What are you, a six-year-old?
All I have. That's all I have.
Well, you better think of something quickly, all right?
You guys know a guy named Jimmy? You totally look like his brother. You totally look like his brother, man. You do.
You guys on MySpace, or...?
Great duo for Seth Rogen and Bill Hader when they're trying to draw the perp.
Like, what? African.
Was he African?
African.
No, he was American, and he was like you. He looked just like you.
He's Jewish.
Just Wait, like
okay.
him.
Okay, Jew. It's an odd crime for a Jew to commit.
Yeah, pretty docile.
Okay, so we have an African Jew wearing a hoodie.
No, you don't. No, that's not what I said. Is that what you heard me say? I said he looked like you. Do you look like an African Jew?
No, I look like a cop.
Yeah.
He was Caucasian.
Caucasian?
Oh.
Okay. Kind of looked like Eminem. Does that help you?
Eminem.
So he was circular.
Marshall Mathers. Eminem, the rapper Eminem.
Do you look like this?
I always love Jonah Hill's like hallucination in the liquor store too.
First, ma'am, would you like some help with your groceries?
Well, that would be lovely, young man. Would you like me to buy you alcohol?
That would be lovely. Enjoy your many years.
I will. Enjoy fucking Jules.
I will.
My other great line, and I'll stop reciting lines, is when he's talking to Emma Stone.
Thank you, because, so good. You know, we're worried about that. That would be great. Plus, you know, you scratch our backs, we'll scratch yours.
Well, Jules, the funny thing about my back is that it's located on my cock.
Fuck, dude, I want to rewatch this movie so bad. It's so good.
Yeah, I'm going to rewatch that movie probably tomorrow. It's a movie that will never get old for me. And that's the case with a lot of these on this list. It's super bad. The references, the jokes, there's so many, and I just forget about them.
It's fucking Soccer is another good one. There's just so many good quotable parts in this movie. Fuck, dude. It's fucking Soccer, Greg. It's Soccer.
So number one for me, super bad. Number one for Kenjack, super bad. Number one for the listeners, super bad. Number one for Trebon's Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Let's run through the list really quick, and then we will touch on a few that we didn't get to dive into, and then we'll wrap up the podcast. My 15 through 1, Mean Girls, Team America, World Police, Borat, Tropic Thunder, Wet Hot American Summer, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Rod, Anchorman, 40-Year-Old Virgin, Role Models, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, I Love You Man, Bad Santa, Step Brothers, Super Bad, Ken Jack, Zoolander, Old School, I Love You Man, School of Rock, Hangover, 40-Year-Old Virgin, Borat, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, Shaun of the Dead, In Bruges, Hot Rod, Dodgeball, Step Brothers, Anchorman, Superbad, Terrell Bonds, 15 through 1, Step Brothers, Dodgeball, The Hangover, Tropic Thunder, Team America, World Police, Knocked Up, Best in Show, Role Models, Anchorman, 40-Year-Old Virgin, Walk Hard, Mean Girls, Superbad, Borat, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and finally, you the listeners, Mean Girls, Talladega Nights, Hot Rod, Tropic Thunder, Pineapple Express, Borat, Wedding Crashers, Dodgeball, Old School, 40-Year-Old Virgin, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, The Hangover, Step Brothers, Anchorman, and number one, Superbad. So we all have similar lists to an extent, but I think we can all agree on any comedy on that list. I don't think we disliked any picks. Kedjek, you shook your head a little bit at how high up Trill had Mean Girls, but you still like Mean Girls, right?
Oh, yeah, I love Mean Girls. I just didn't think I'd put it in my top five. But I no knocks against you. The more you're explaining it, it does make sense.
So let's get a couple that we mentioned, 15 through 6. We didn't get to touch on much. And if you want to say anything, say anything. Kenjack, you and I had Shaun of the Dead in our top 15. I think Shaun of the Dead is my favorite Cornetto trilogy from Edgar Wright. I love all three of them. The World's End, Hot Fuzz. But I think Shaun of the Dead is my favorite one. And the whole The Plan scene where he talks about what they're going to do, how they're going to wait it out and drink tea or whatever, have beer.
Yeah.
That's like, to me, that is Edgar Wright. Like that, you see elements of that in all of his movies from Baby Driver to Hot Fuzz. And Shaun of the Dead is great. And I didn't really watch, it took me a few years to watch Shaun of the Dead. And I'm like, damn, I wish I would have watched this much sooner.
I watched it, I think maybe 2 or 3 years after it came out, and I'm thankful I watched it as early as I did because I got all my friends into it as well, and we all started quoting it nonstop. I think that if I had to pick out of the trilogy, probably
Hot Fuzz is a little too ridiculous, so I'd probably go Shaun of the Dead 2, even though it is about fucking zombies. But they're all so damn funny, dude. And I love the duo of Nick Frost and Simon Pegg. They're so fucking hysterically good at comedy. They make me laugh at every single movie they do together.
Shaun of the Dead was on the listeners list at number 24, 9.7% of the vote. Trill, you had one on there, Knocked Up. Knocked Up didn't make actually any of our lists besides yours. It was on mine at number 18. It just missed.
Oh, I thought Knocked Up was hilarious. I love that movie.
Very funny.
Yeah, very, very good Seth Rogen. Some of the best scenes in that movie were him and his friends, and they were trying to create that website for nudes in movies, and then they find out like that Mr. Skin already exists. It's funny shit like that. The one I did want to talk about, Role Models. Yeah. Role Models was 8 on my list, and I just wanted to mention it because I do think Role Models gets overlooked sometimes. Certainly not on these lists, but just when people talk about the funniest movies of the past 15 years. First, you have McLovin, Christopher Mintz-Plasse. Is that how you say it?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you got McLovin as a LARPer, and the way they had the finale of this movie take place at a LARPing battle is one of the funnier things I think I've seen in movies.
That whole LARPing subplot was so fucking funny. Ken Jeong is the main bad guy. And who was the guy, the dude from Veep, was like his right-hand man?
Yeah, he's actually in a couple of the movies on my list. His name is Matt Walsh.
Yeah.
And he's actually in Bad Santa. He's in Role Models, as you said. And he's also in one more. Oh, he's in The Hangover.
Yeah, I was going to say Hangover.
He's probably in more, too. But yeah, he is great. Gene Lynch, great role for Gene Lynch.
Yeah.
Well, well, well. Isn't Mr. Bullshit and Doctor I'm Full of Shit?
In what way are we full of shit? Which one of us has the PhD?
That's just one of my favorite Paul Rudd roles because he is so disaffected and disenfranchised from life. And it's perfect Paul Rudd type of character.
That was a great role. If you're white, you Ben Affleck is an amazing line. I love that line so much.
Also, you have the really nerdy guy from Sturdy Wings, Martin, the dweeb, and he's the one that makes the reference of...
It's my fifth year with Wings. I guess Paul McCartney's got nothing on me, huh? Love, take me down to the streets.
It's not a Wings song.
Yeah, it's one of their hits from the 70s. I'm not sure which one.
It's not.
It isn't?
No.
I think it might be.
That's not. Nobody sings that song.
I don't know about that. I'll have to Google it.
They do it throughout the entire movie.
There's always a guy with acoustic guitar that doesn't quite know how to play it.
Kumbaya. Wait, I know it. Kumbaya, you know, Kumbaya. Wait, I know it. Kumbaya, my lord. Oh, yeah, I got it. Kumbaya. This is it. Kumbaya.
I think that's got it.
Ah, kumbaya, huh? You don't have to know any Wings, do you?
Wings, yeah. Now I'll take you down to the streets.
Ha ha, yeah.
It's a great setup. That's another thing we haven't really touched on. There are so many great setups in these movies that have payoffs later on. It has another small line of mine that I really like in the beginning when Elizabeth Banks is trying to help out one of her clients who got caught stealing TVs.
No, I don't want a plea bargain. I didn't do it.
Mr. Garvin, I just don't know what other options we have, you know, because they have this clear videotape of you stealing a lot of TVs.
That could be any bald guy.
Look at me. David Garvin, stealing TVs. Who would believe it?
That is not me.
Stealing TVs. Really overlooked. Joel Atruglio is great in that one, too. All, like, the lair or LARPing lines they have. Like, there's these little kids that Christopher Mintz-Plasse character. He feeds them, like, Snicker bars.
All right, Cleva. One more. I should have never started feeding the goddamn elves.
Jesus Christ.
You should never feed the trolls.
Fuck, dude. That movie was so good. I didn't even have it in my top 15. The more I'm looking at it, I'm just mad because like I was trying to think of like what people have all seen. And I feel like not a lot of people had seen Role Models, which is my main gripe against it. But it was such a fucking good movie. That one I had
a trouble getting on.
Yeah, Kiss Army. I had that trouble with that. Grandma's Boy, Tropic Thunder, Wedding Crashers too. Also, like I just couldn't fit on my list as well, and I'm kind of mad about that. And even Beer Fest.
Another guy from Role Models I want to bring up. Ken Marino was really good in Role Models.
The stepdad,
douchebag stepfather. Yeah, he's I can't get it out. I'll splice the clip in.
When I was his age, I had 4 or 5 girlfriends at one time. Didn't I tell you that?
He was fucking his cousin.
I wasn't fucking my cousin. We kissed because I didn't know she was my cousin. But when I found out, I stopped kissing her. But I fucked her friends. I fucked my cousin's friends.
Good God! Do you like your kid?
Danny, please, don't.
Augie, I get it. I don't know how I could live with them.
Okay, that's enough.
No, honestly, big boy clothes? What are you, I mean, you're wearing track pants with a Hawaiian shirt. What are you, you're like Don Ho running a marathon.
You know what? Sticks and stones, pal.
Dude, fucking, I need to watch that movie now. It was so good.
There's a couple other ones in the list. Wet Hot American Summer, another Paul Rudd role with a plethora of amazing actors and actresses. I mean, Wet Hot American Summer is basically, it's an ensemble cast, basically. It's, I mean, the who's who of comedy from the 2000s and more. I mean, Bradley Cooper's in it. Amy Poehler, Michael Showalter, Elizabeth Banks, Michael Ian Black, Janine Garofalo, Chris Maloney, Ken Marino again, Molly Shannon, Joe Latruglio's in it. Of course, Paul Rudd. That's a great one. Others in the list that we didn't really get into talking to, School of Rock, Old School. Troy, you talked about it a little bit. Talladega Nights. But one more I want to touch on quick, because we all had it. 40-Year-Old Virgin. And again, my Paul Rudd man crush is sticking out here. But him hating the Michael McDonald DVD playing in the store and how much he fucking hates it is one of my favorite gags. I have a friend who, his family owns a furniture company, and they play a lot of Michael McDonald in the store. So it's like very relevant, like personally for me. Love that. Great Paul Rudd moment when he just fucking hates Michael McDonald.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take her to capacity. Are you okay with that?
Give it a shot.
Sweet. Oh yeah. Michael McDonald, man, I haven't heard this in years.
Yeah, I haven't heard it in like 48 minutes.
If I get that on a set, will you throw in the DVD?
You don't get the set, I'll throw in the DVD.
I'll take it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. Tropic Thunder's opening is also genius. Speaking of genius comedy things, the opening to that one, Satan's Alley, with Kurt Lazarus, McGuire, MTV Best Kiss winner. You had the Fatties, Jack Black's thing, which is like a play on what was the other one in there? Oh, duh,
Tug Speedman.
Ben Stiller's character, Tug Speedman, and it's a Scorcher 5 or 4, where he's like, one I hated leaving off my list, Not Another Teen Movie. I love Not Another Teen Movie. Chris Evans, shout out to Captain America. He's in that movie with a main role. What about you guys? Anything off your list that you struggled to put on but just didn't quite make it?
Wedding Crashers was 16 for me and Pineapple Express was 17. I do want to shout out the Euro Trip movie and maybe even Road Trip a little bit, even though I think Euro Trip is a superior movie. Great cameos in that one. One from Matt Damon. Scotty doesn't know. And the other is Fred Armisen. Yep. Is Miscusi.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. Well, Team America, my favorite joke is obviously Matt Damon. Just because they said the puppet looked so fucked up, they didn't want to keep it as Matt Damon, so they just had him say Matt Damon the entire time. That's another thing that gets referenced a lot, especially whenever you talk about Matt Damon.
Matt Damon. Matt Damon. Matt Damon. Matt Damon. Matt Damon.
But Team America, I talked about dodgeball last week. Excuse me, not dodgeball, basketball.
Trey Parker, Matt Stone. Yeah. Trey Parker is a fucking genius. The music in Team America is funny as hell, too. It's a good precursor to the Book of Mormon, what they did there.
Yeah, they're comedic geniuses. Even if you don't like their humor or South Park, which is crazy to me, but they are geniuses. What about you, Ken Jack?
What I struggled with besides Wedding Crashers as well, Grandma's Boy, I don't think a lot of people jive with too much. I thought it was really funny. Love Linda Cardellini. I can't even remember the fucking main guy's names. The offshoot actor from the Happy Madison universe. He was pretty good, I think, in a main role. Tropic Thunder had trouble leaving off. Beer Fest is one I feel like I referenced a ton in high school that I just couldn't even think to put on this list because it probably just isn't rewatchable as it was.
Doesn't hold up, I'm telling you. I kind of got trash for that. Not trash, but people kind of were like, what? Jeff doesn't like Beer Fest? Beer Fest, I rewatched it. I'm sorry. It is not anywhere near as funny as I used to think it was. I had this idea that Beer Fest was hilarious, and I rewatched it. I'm like, oh, that's not that funny. And I think we talked about it on this podcast.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the landfill 2 thing is very funny. And there are some very funny moments. But I thought that movie was way funnier from start to finish than it really was when I rewatched it.
Will Forte's German character is so fucking funny in that. That's one of my favorite parts of the entire movie.
Was Blades of Glory on anyone's list?
Not me.
No, and it wasn't on the listeners list either. Yeah. It wasn't even in the top 30.
I'm kind of surprised by that. I thought it would have cracked the top 30. But I, you know, going back to it, the best part of it was Will Arnett and Amy Poehler, their character.
Another movie I had struggled with was Kung Pao, but no one's seen that movie. And it was really kind of weird looking back on it.
Oh, it's super funny.
It was super, super funny, especially for the time. But I think rewatchability is definitely a little bit low on that.
So that's our lists. Pretty good lists. I mean, I like how mine turned out, even though it was a struggle. Hope you had a good time listening to this. We spliced in a lot of clips to make you laugh so we wouldn't have to do the impressions from the actual movie. Good job. Superbad wins out for most of us. Trill Ballins has Forgetting Sarah Marshall at 1, but he also had Superbad at number 3. I mean, again, 10 through 1 for most of us. I think we're all pretty much very close.
Yeah, it's splitting hairs at that point.
At least top 5. Yeah. All right, great podcast. Had a lot of fun this week. We will be reviewing next week Isle of Dogs, Wes Anderson movie, first time we ever reviewed a Wes Anderson movie, and Pacific Rim Uprising, our second John Boyega movie. Other than that, I don't know. I got nothing else.
Yeah, let's go watch Ninja kill some people in Fortnite.
Yeah, we're going to go watch Fortnite. We're just going to go watch somebody play
our
Fortnite.
King. We start calling him our king.
Our king ninja.
I love that. I love that blue haired rascal.
He needs more followers.
Yeah, he's yeah. He's really hurting right now.
Okay, for Ken Jack and Trill Ballins, I'm Jeff Flo. See Isle of Dogs, see Pacific Rim. We will talk to you next week.
Love, take me down to the streets. Love, take me down to the streets. This one you don't get fed at home, still gotta give the dog his bone. Take that love into the streets. Take me down. I need you, but you need something special first from me. Love, take me down where I've so often been. Love, take me down to the streets.
Come on!
Love, take me down to the streets. It's when the love don't work at all.